Council, and as you heard, we have in our panel both Judge Beals and Judge O'Brien, and of course I am Judge Chapin, and we have reviewed your cases and your filings, and we are ready to proceed. Mr. Westendorf, if you would like to go forward on the Keeling matter.
Thank you, Your Honor. I am Tate Westendorf with the Virginia Beach Public Defender's Office, arguing on behalf of Ulysses Keeling. This was a three-day jury trial on charges of robbery, first-degree murder under a felony murder theory, and use of a firearm in the commission of a felony. The evidence at trial is that it was a drug deal gone bad scenario. My client and a friend, Terrence Wilson, had purchased what they believed to be cocaine from Rafael Hernandez, who's the deceased in the case. After my client had examined the supposed cocaine, he determined that it was fake, that it was salt. At that point, my client, Terrence Wilson, and another gentleman named Richard Barlow met with Hernandez in Virginia Beach. Hernandez got into their car in the back seat, was sitting next to my client. My client and Terrence Wilson had requested a refund for the fake cocaine that they had purchased, or what they alleged to be fake cocaine, and Hernandez had refused. Eventually, my client took out a gun. Terrence Wilson testified as a Commonwealth's witness at trial and testified that the gun remained at Mr. Keeling's side and that he never pointed it at Hernandez. According to Wilson, my client's focus was on obtaining a refund for the alleged fake drugs that were purchased. He never demanded a wallet, drugs, jewelry, or anything like that. His entire focus was on the money.
Well, Mr. Judge Beals, Mr. Westendorf, didn't Mr. Barlow testify otherwise, that he did point the gun at him and indicated that he might well use it against him?
There was some conflicting testimony. Barlow did testify. He did say, he did indicate that his memory of the events was not great, that he was viewing some of the events in the dark through the rearview mirror of the vehicle, and it said his focus really wasn't on where the gun was. For whatever it's worth, I think Wilson's testimony seemed to be a little bit clearer on that point, but your point is well taken. There was some conflict in their testimony. Prior to the trial and at trial itself, the Commonwealth had stipulated that there was at least a scintilla of evidence to support that my client had a bona fide claim of right to the money, and that he was therefore entitled to a claim of right jury instruction on the robbery charge. At some point, Hernandez, who evidently wasn't afraid of the gun, said something to the effect of, "I don't believe you're built like that. I don't think you're going to do anything with that gun, and I'm going to try your ass," and that's directed at my client. And at that point, the testimony was that he punched my client several times in the face, 3 to 4 times, and then jumped on top of him. At that point, both Wilson and Barlow panic, and they jump out of the car. They hear a single gunshot. The drug dealer, Hernandez, opened the car door and falls to the ground. He died. The forensic examiner determined that the cause of death was the single gunshot wound to his chest. The first assignment of error, we're assigning error to the court, not allowing the defense to pursue a self-defense claim at trial, and not allowing the defense to present evidence of Hernandez's prior bad acts demonstrating his violent character. The way that self-defense issue was handled in this case was a bit unusual, unusual to me at least. There was a pretrial motion filed by the defense asking to be permitted to present a self-defense claim at trial. That strikes me as a bit unusual because at that stage the court hadn't had the opportunity to hear any testimony. But in any event, there was a hearing on that motion on February 25th, 2014. Both the defense and the Commonwealth had proffered evidence. There was no testimony, and the trial court had denied the motion at that point. The issue was revisited at trial after the Commonwealth had presented most of its evidence, including the testimony of Wilson and Barlow. And again, the motion was denied, and the defense was not permitted to present evidence of Hernandez's his prior violent acts. The defense entered all of that into the record through both proffer and court transcripts.
And Mr. Westendorf, this is Judge Beals again.
Yes, sir.
I don't think there's any doubt that it's, you know, seems to be preserved for appeal because of the proffers made. But where is there any evidence here, really? And I gather there's really, you're not pursuing the justifiable self-defense, but rather the excusable self-defense theory.
Correct, correct.
Where is there any evidence even of excusable self-defense if your client has been involved in purchasing drugs, he doesn't think he got what he paid for, so he drives to the victim's home, asks the victim to come out and get in the car and meet with him, and then pulls a gun on him and says, you know, you're going to pay me back what you owe me, and the victim's emptying his pockets and then makes a phone call, presumably to another dealer or supplier of his, and then presumably that phone call didn't yield any sympathy for paying money back, and so at that point, as you say, Mr. Hernandez, probably thinking, I've got a gun on me here, if I get out of the car, I'll get shot, so he lunges for him and starts hitting him. Where does your client retreat? I know there's evidence that he sort of cowers a bit and is surprised, I guess, by this, and he's got a gun. But he doesn't get out of the car. He's come all the way to the victim's home and pulls a gun on him. Where's the excusable self-defense here? It seems like Mr. Hernandez is the one engaging in self-defense.
Well, this is the position I would take, taking it step by step. Again, the Commonwealth stipulated, and the court apparently agreed, that there was at least a scintilla of evidence to support a claim of right jury instruction. So everyone agreed that there was at least that scintilla that my client was acting lawfully when he took out the gun and demanded his money back. My position would be that if there's a scintilla of evidence to support the claim of right instruction, there's by definition a scintilla of evidence that my client was lawfully trying to reclaim his money. And if he was lawfully trying to reclaim his money, he had the right to defend himself when Hernandez jumped on him and began to punch him.
But let me ask you this, Mr. Westendorf. I mean, I hear what you're saying, but why couldn't there be, if he thinks he got taken in a deal, albeit an illegal deal, but he got taken in that, so there's a claim of right instruction for maybe it's not a robbery. Maybe he's just trying to get his money back, but yet when he goes to the victim's house, for a meeting, gets him in his car, and then points a gun at him and threatens him, why at that point, apparently the victim was emptying his pockets, why at that point isn't it a question of self-defense by the victim and not by your client, who never says, oh, I shouldn't have done this, I need your retreat, and afterwards doesn't seem concerned at all that he's just left this man either dead or dying in the road and throwing his possessions out of the window as they flee the scene.
Right, and that very well could be a reasonable theory of the case. I don't know whether the self-defense argument, when I say self-defense argument, Mr. Keeling's self-defense argument, if he had been permitted to present it, would have carried the day with the jury. But what I would submit is that there was at least a scintilla of evidence to support that this was an excusable homicide situation.
But where's the retreat by your client?
Right. As far as the retreat is concerned, we're talking about the backseat of a car, so it's clearly very close confines. And then he has Mr. Hernandez on top of him, pummeling him. So what I would submit is that he's retreated. There's really no opportunity to retreat.
At that point, is he just losing the fight, at least briefly? He's not retreating. He's just losing.
Well, What I would urge is that he has no way to retreat at that point. He's retreated as far as he can possibly go in the car. The man's on top of him, and he's at least implicitly making his desire for peace known, because the testimony was that he's cowering and he's trying to shield himself from the blows. So I would suggest that there's at least that, as far as being allowed to argue it to the jury and to get the jury instruction, it's just the scintilla standard. I know that the assignment of error maybe could have been a little more artfully written, but the standard is to argue self-defense to the jury. You only need that scintilla, and I would argue that we've got the scintilla. They found that, the court found, the Commonwealth agreed, that there was at least some evidence to support that there was a valid claim of right defense, which would suggest that he's acting, there's at least a scintilla to support that Mr. Keeling was acting lawfully when he took out his gun.
I have a hard time, though, Mr. Westendorf, and I don't mean to belabor this, but
sure.
Understanding why a disagreement over whether he got taken advantage of in a deal, a drug deal, results in a self-defense instruction if he's the aggressor through the whole thing, essentially, and in only is sort of briefly losing a tussle in the back seat of a car, but doesn't even say, oh, you know, I shouldn't have done this, I'm sorry, I'll leave you alone now.
Right. Our position would be that he wasn't the aggressor throughout the entire thing. The testimony, at least from Wilson, is that the gun always remained at his side, and that he never pointed it at Mr. Hernandez, and that it was Mr. Hernandez who had taken on a more aggressive demeanor and was the first person to put hands on and to make it a physical altercation. I would submit that at fair...
Mr. Westendorf, this is Judge Chaffin. I appreciate you're making a good argument for your client. However, doesn't he say at the conclusion of all this, after they've shoved the victim out of the car, doesn't he say, I'm going to go back and finish him off?
I believe there was some testimony to that effect, yes. Which, you know, I would concede would tend to undercut the position. But again, I mean, that happens after the fact. So,
But you would have to acknowledge that, in fact, that shows some intent on his behalf as to how he felt about the victim, as far as it had it been, as you're arguing, self.
I mean, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to talk over you. I would at least concede that it's an inference that the jury could make, but my position would be that the jury should at least have that self-defense option on the table. It's something they should have been permitted to weigh. There has to be only that bare scintilla of evidence presented of self-defense in order for the defense to be permitted to make that argument. And because of the pretrial ruling and then the renewed ruling at the trial, the defense wasn't even permitted to go there. I would suggest that it should have been up to the finder of fact to determine whether or not this was a self-defense scenario, and they just never were given that option.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
About the fact that you have here felony murder, and there is some case law out there that would indicate that self-defense isn't really relevant in felony murder. Now, I know you're taking issue with the robbery, the underlying
right.
felony, too. But if you do have a legitimate robbery conviction, let's just assume that for sake of this question, why would self-defense be relevant if it's a felony murder situation?
I would, again, and you acknowledged it in your question, we're of course challenging the legitimacy of the robbery conviction. So the first thing I would say is that the hypothetical is not relevant to this particular factual scenario. I'm not aware of any case law that's dead on point that says that you are absolutely precluded from arguing self-defense in a felony murder context. I would concede that the case law is not favorable on that point. Sort of a classic hypothetical, I suppose, would be if you an individual goes and robs somebody at gunpoint, and then the victim begins to defend themselves and starts to, you know, punch the perpetrator, you can't just shoot him and claim self-defense. But this was a much more messy scenario. It wasn't that cut and dry. I think everybody involved didn't have clean hands.
Well, as you say, that is the case. There were no clean hands here. But, well, let me just follow up on what you just argued. Why, if your client was getting punched and sort of maybe for a bit there losing the struggle or losing the fight that just actually started, can he just pull out a gun and shoot the person punching him? I mean, it's not like he's attacking him with a knife.
Right, and that's obviously a part of any self-defense claim, that the case law has consistently said that the force used has to be commensurate with the harm threatened. And I think that really goes hand-in-hand with the sort of the second aspect of that first assignment of error, because the defense was also prevented from presenting evidence of Hernandez's prior violent criminal acts. And I think that really goes hand-in-hand with the self-defense issue. There was evidence, and it would have been tremendously powerful evidence if it had been received by the jury, that Hernandez had a prior conviction for voluntary manslaughter. He had a prior conviction for unlawful wounding. In addition to that, there were two witnesses, Parsons and Woodhouse, who would have testified that in the voluntary manslaughter case, Hernandez had killed a man during a drug transaction. The evidence also would have been that Hernandez had a history of using both guns and knives. And so that really would have been very powerful evidence towards the issue of self-defense and how the jury might have perceived the entire situation and what inferences they might have drawn from it, because I think by preventing all of that evidence from coming in, it allowed the Commonwealth to, for lack of a better word, to kind of whitewash what kind of a man Hernandez was.
Mr. Westendorf, this is Judge Chafin, and I have allowed you to go considerably over your time because we have been asking you questions and you've been responding to those questions. Is there anything that you have that you'd like to wrap up?
Of course, I wanted to address the second of assignment of error as well.
Okay, you can do that very briefly because I have been possibly too generous, but as I said, I think that we've been asking you enough questions.
I appreciate that, Your Honor. The second assignment of error dealt with the court granting a Commonwealth's motion in limine that precluded the defense from admitting any evidence that Hernandez had cocaine and alcohol in his system at the time of his death. I would submit that would have been highly probative evidence for a number of reasons. One, Hernandez had a history of violent behavior when he was under the influence of alcohol. Woodhouse would have testified to that effect, that he had been consuming alcohol when he killed a man in the voluntary manslaughter case. Another proffered defense witness, Boone, would have testified that Hernandez was under the influence when he had stabbed somebody in the unlawful wounding case. So for those reasons alone, it was highly probative evidence, and I would argue was an abuse of discretion to exclude it. But the other critical point that I would highlight is that Hernandez being under the influence of alcohol and cocaine was relevant toward the issue of who pulled the trigger. That was a major theme that the defense had raised throughout its closing arguments, was we don't know who pulled the trigger. And the trial court had even recognized that that was a viable defense at one point. The trial court had said, isn't your best defense really that the guy got shot accidentally in the scuffle and the gun went off? And I would submit that if the jury had known that Hernandez was under the influence of cocaine and alcohol, that very well could have impacted their analysis on that precise issue. If Hernandez is intoxicated, an inference can reasonably be drawn that he would be more aggressive, more likely to be reckless, and it very well could have led the jury to make the inference that it was more likely that he was shot accidentally in a struggle over the gun. I'm not arguing that the jury undoubtedly would have reached that conclusion, but I mean, that's not the standard. They could have been swayed by that evidence, and accordingly, I'm asking that you reverse all of Mr. Keeling's convictions and remand them for a new trial.
Thank you, Mr. Westendorf. Are there any additional questions by the judges?
None from me, thank you.
No further questions. Thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Westendorf. Mr.
Campbell. Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Aaron Campbell on behalf of the Commonwealth. This case presents an interesting issue of whether excusable self-defense is even available in a felony murder case. I won't dwell on it too much because I don't think the court actually has to decide that issue, but I will just say that it's important to remember that self-defense is a law of necessity, and a defendant can't rely upon his own misconduct to justify the necessity of killing someone. The Supreme Court had a case where they say you can't go a-gunning for your adversary and at the first sign of resistance, kill the victim and expect to have a self-defense, a viable self-defense claim. I recognize that Virginia's never really weighed in on the issue. I think a lot of other courts, especially in robbery cases, have just said self-defense is not available in felony murder cases whenever there is a robbery. Like I said, I don't think the court has to even go there because plainly the requirements for self-defense were not met in this case. The defendant has to show that he retreated from the altercation, and I don't think he has shown that because he could have left the car, but he did not do so. He cowered. At best, he cowered against the car door. Even if we assume that he retreated as far as he could, he certainly hasn't met the second requirement, which is he has to make known a desire for peace. And simply covering your face up is, I would submit, far below the requirement to make known your desire for peace. If two individuals are in a fight, and one individual is shielding his face because he didn't get punched in the face, the other individual would not recognize that as a desire for peace. And I submit that the trial court did not abuse its discretion in finding that this self-defense claim was not viable in order for him to present, because it's important also to remember that what he's trying to do is present the defendant's prior bad acts evidence. And in order to do that, he has to have a viable self-defense claim. And I would submit that the trial court did not abuse his discretion in not admitting those prior bad acts because he hadn't met that threshold of a viable self-defense claim. I'll make one point about the toxicology report. I would submit that the appellant has argued that it was highly relevant to whoever pulled the trigger. I will concede that that is an issue in the case, that the Commonwealth had to prove that Mr. Keeling was the one that actually killed the victim in this case. But I would submit that the fact that the victim was intoxicated, it's much different than a case when a defendant is, say, operating a piece of machinery or operating a vehicle while intoxicated. I think it's highly speculative that this tussle in the back that happened within seconds in the back of a car, that the fact that the victim was under the influence of drugs and alcohol, that he may have shot himself. I think that would be too speculative to present to the jury and have them speculate that had played any role in this matter. And I'd also say that it's cumulative of the evidence that we already have that the victim was acting aggressively and I'm sure he was trying to get the gun away from the defendant in this case. So for those reasons, I don't think the trial court abused its discretion in refusing to submit this report. And if the court has no other questions or any questions, I will just rely on the rest of my brief.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell.
Other questions?
This is Judge Beals. I do have one question.
Sure.
If the court were to find that excusable self-defense can be a defense to felony murder, I hear what you're saying, it doesn't make any difference here. Is that right?
Yeah.
And the reason is because of the facts of this case?
Because of the facts of this case, I don't think it would make it. I would like to the court to rule that it's not a defense, but I think under the facts of this case, he just hasn't made a showing under the requirements for.
How do you respond to Mr. Westendorf's argument that if there's a scintilla of evidence for a claim of right with regard to the robbery charge, even though it was an illegal drug deal, then there ought to be a scintilla of evidence for jury instruction on self-defense?
Well, I mean, the claim of right defense went to the robbery. That's one, and the self-defense goes to the homicide. So I would say that those are two different concepts, one. But I understand that it's a felony murder case, so the robbery is partially involved in it, but this, I guess my second argument would be that this is a they're trying to get prior bad acts into evidence, so the trial court is making an evidentiary ruling, so it's an abuse of discretion standard. Therefore, the trial court has to be the one to sort of make this threshold determination. And I guess the third is that I don't think he has a scintilla of evidence, and especially with regards to making his desire for peace known. I don't think shielding your face even meets that standard.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions?
None from me, thank you.
No further questions.
Very good. Then, Mr. Westendorf and Mr. Campbell, I want to thank you today for your participation by telephone conference. I have to comment that you have both represented your clients well and presented excellent arguments to this panel, and we will therefore be in a position to move forward with your case and do our work, and we can release you from this conference call. Again, thank you. And also, I note that this is a case, Mr. Westendorf, that you accommodated Mr. Campbell on due to his